Now, to show our gratitude, we're not going to be like the other guys and jerk you around and bullshit you. We're going to tell you the truth.
Shane Douglas is the man who ignites the new flame of the sport of professional wrestling. The era of the franchise. The era of the ECW.
North South Connection Podcast Network, JT here for the most extreme menage a trois violence you'll ever experience, the extreme three-way dance. Joining me, as always, are my partners on this show, that is John, and that is Jenny. How are you both doing?
Feeling good. Lots of crickets out tonight.
Feeling good. We get to do the inspiration for the title of our show.
Yes, it is, because tonight we are getting extra extreme with the three-way dance 1995 special from the ECW arena, which I believe happened, I don't know, was it like April 9th in there somewhere? April 8th. Okay. And that is from the ECW arena in Philadelphia, South Philadelphia. And we had a pretty good card. There's been a lot of build. I think it's built pretty well. A lot of excitement, especially for the three-way dance main event, which is, of course, slated to be Public Enemy versus Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko and Taz and Sabu for the tag team titles, plus a myriad of other matches. So why don't we go ahead and dive right in? What do you guys think about that?
Deep dive.
Joey Styles in the Nest talks about tonight's big three-way dance showdown, plus all the hype. However, and I guess, you know, we should qualify, as usual, these openings from Joey are usually tacked on because we're seeing, like, the home video version of this, because obviously they don't air live at the time. So he's basically explaining what happened, even though later, you know, that occurs later. Like, we don't actually see it at this time, but he does make the announcement that Sabu is stuck in Japan. Paul Lee Dangerously came out, talked to the fans, told them that he will not make the show tonight, but Paul and Taz have a special surprise, and we'll see how that all plays out. So Joey tells us off the top, the announced main event will not be occurring as was announced, as Sabu is not here. That'll unfold quite a bit for us in the weeks to come, but for now he is MIA. Now we go back down to ringside, where Joey properly kicks off the show. Brings out Stevie Richards, the Broad Street Bullies, and Raven to booze. Raven's definitely, I thought, owning the character more now. We clip ahead a bit on the tape to Stevie telling the Bullies they're fired if they lose tonight. And says Raven told him that. Bullies say they're going in there, they'll win the match, they promise. Stevie tells Raven he'll make him proud tonight as he signed the Bullies for the special match with the Pit Bulls, a new team he found. The Pit Bulls charge out like wild animals, and that does bring us to our opening match, the Broad Street Bullies.
Fireball.
Taking on the Pit Bulls. The Pit Bulls attack at the bell, beat the shit out of the Bullies in and out of the ring. Pit Bull 2 crushes Stetson with a massive press slam, buries him with a spin kick to the corner. Joey sets up Stevie. Joey says Stevie set the Bullies up with this match. Pit Bull 1 hits a Savak kick, and then they wreck Stetson into the super bomb. And that is that. Joey says the Bullies were one of the finest teams in ECW history. I don't know if I fully agree with that take, but they were destroyed here tonight by the Pit Bulls. So I went to a paltry half a star. But it was a pretty effective beatdown by the Pitbulls. We'll get to the post-match in a moment. But, Johnny, what did you think of the match itself?
Yeah, it got the job done. Nice squash. And I love how the Pitbulls are just loyal meatheads right away. The undying loyalty to Raven. After, I guess, Jason is no longer to be seen. And he's quickly forgotten. And all of a sudden, they're just so loyal to Raven or Richards. Loyal meatheads.
Yes, that was my question with this squash match that I gave half a star. Where's Jason? And since when did the Pit Bulls give a fuck about Raven?
Well, I guess we'll find out in a moment. Did you feel bad for the Bullies? Do you think they're one of the finest teams in history?
Well, I mean, I have a soft spot for them, but no.
Yeah, you have a soft spot for everyone, but yes.
Well.
I didn't. I
not
forgot.
The Pitbulls.
When they came out, I was at first I didn't know who they were at first. They weren't really ingrained into my memory. And then Stetson, of course.
By Menin. Yeah, it was a beatdown. The Bullies are done. They stagger off. Raven's looking around in confusion. Stevie celebrates. He says he told Raven he found a team. The Pitbulls say if Raven wants them to kick ass, they'll kick ass and the belts will be theirs. Pitbull 1 says they will hand Raven the belts to show their loyalty. Stevie is awesome. He was running his mouth that he hides behind Raven. Pitbull 1 says Raven is their master. He points them to the back. And a big development here. Stevie says the Bullies are history. The Pitbulls are now with their crew. Stevie says you may think this is the best thing to happen to them tonight, but then he brings up a girl that Raven told him about. Raven stares at him. Stevie talks about the girl from summer camp that was with Raven a dreamer. Remember Raven, the girl you told me about? And Stevie says he has a huge surprise. He brought her here. Raven's pissed and just fucking backhand Stevie across the face. He says, you brought that fat, disgusting, overweight piece of hell here. Stevie begs for a chance to show him that she's now beautiful. It's not what Raven left behind at summer camp. And Stevie introduces Beulah McGillicuddy. And out she comes. She looks amazing. She's grunged out like Raven. And Raven stares at her. And then we clip ahead. So before we get to our next match, Jenny, what did you think of the introduction of Beulah?
Well, I really loved when Raven knocked the shit out of Richards.
He fucking cracked him.
But yeah, I mean, Beulah, she has an interesting look. Not sure I believe all this summer camp nonsense for some reason.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. Where is she on the Philly scale?
Philly 9.
A 9? Okay.
8? Right. I don't know. What do you think, John?
About a Philly 7-ish.
Oh, 7. Okay.
Yeah, that seems more accurate.
She's
but
a cheerleader.
Yeah.
She's cheerleader's material.
Well, I mean, cheerleaders ranges from Philly 3s to Philly.
Exactly.
So what do you think, John? Right, did you think this was well done? Did you, or was the summer camp stuff forced?
It doesn't age too well with the a little too heavy on the fat acne girl that they're trying to say that Dreamer was mean to, and you know, that only Raven was nice to. So a little dated.
I feel like that should be the opposite. Also, that Dreamer was nice and
no,
Raven
well,
was a dick.
You know, we gotta see it play out because they're saying, I guess what the story is, right? That Dreamer was a jock. You know, they're trying to portray Dreamer as the cool guy, right? And Raven was like the loner nerd, and that's why he's still like a loner loser and all grungy and angry and emo. And Beulah was the ugly girl that was in love with Tommy and he ignored her. So if this is like the second act of Can't Hardly Wait or all those stupid fucking movies, right, the nerdy guy's in love with her and she's trying to get with the cool guy.
All she did was take off her glasses and flip her hair up, and she went from a 3. She went from a 3 to a 9.
Yeah, I mean, it may feel a little dated now. I think at the time it's squarely in that zone of late 80s to mid 90s, like all those types of movies where they would do that.
Yeah.
All right. So that does bring us to our next match. We waste no time with this feud as Raven stays in the ring. And here he comes, is Tommy Dreamer. And wasting the time, like I said, but they've already been fighting. Like, they're not slow building this at all. They're diving right into Raven and Tommy fighting. Stevie's chatting with Beulah ringside as Raven sits at the corner. Tommy slides in and the brawl starts right away. In and out of the ring, the crowd eats it all up. Dreamer's fired up as he batters Raven down the aisle and to the back. They go into a closet. Dreamer's unleashing a lot of anger here, using whatever he can along the way. Dreamer pitches Raven back to ringside. He grabs a cheese grater from a fan. He cuts Raven up. That was nasty. The weapons keep flowing as Raven is out on his feet, just kind of staggering around. Raven is able to shove Tommy into a chair that a fan's holding, and then he smashes him with it. Some more nasty shots. Raven's a bloody mess as he throws Tommy into the railing and barrels into him with an elbow smash off the apron. They head back into the fans where Raven drives Tommy to a huge steel pillar. Raven hops on the apron and leaps off the stage with a stage dive to Tommy. That was a cool spot. Dreamer comes back and with some chair shots. He drags Raven down the aisle. They go up to the nest in the staging out there. Dreamer bulldogs Raven, hits a frog splash off the balcony. Dreamer pulls Raven to the ring, loads up a pile driver, shows off Raven all around, and then spikes him hard to the mat. Raven staggers up, and Dreamer shoots him to the ropes, but Raven hits a DDT, but Tommy survives. Raven hits a second DDT, goes to the middle rope, and hits a dropkick. Outside the ring, Stevie's still chatting up Beulah. He tries to kiss her as Raven keeps pouring it on. Beulah slaps Stevie and chokes her, and he chokes her until Tommy makes a save, but it was a setup as Beulah sprays him in the eye with the hairspray. Stevie super kicks him, and Raven has a DDT on the floor, throws Tommy in the ring, and gets the win. And I like that finish a lot. I like the match a lot. It was really hot. These guys showing really sharp chemistry. The dichotomy of the story is already on display. Raven has good offense. He owns this character immediately out of the gates. We're just months into his run. And Dreamer is coming into his own as well. We're at Beulah. We got Stevie. We got the Pitbulls. Like, the whole crew is up and running. This storyline is quickly advanced. And I dug this a lot, Jenny. I went 3.25.
I liked it too. I went 3, but it was chaos to begin with. The crowd was super rabid and super into Dreamer beating the shit out of Raven, which he did very soundly for a while. I really liked the ending on it too. I love that hairspray spot. Nice to see here. The girl getting some offense in a little bit. The DDT was sick, and so was the super kick. I don't know. This was, like you said, it's a story right out of the gate, and we're just barreling ahead with it. So I'm into this. I like it. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I loved it too. And we're lucky because we get like the final product. I'm sure that there was a lot more downtime and chaos, but just the way it melded from the first match with the Pit Bulls, mm-hmm. and they go right in. The beauty of editing where we get to see the final product, and it just everything goes from one section to the next perfectly, and I love the finish too, and also it just shows that Raven is not just a psycho that wants to destroy Dreamer, that he knows enough that he wants to get him in the ring and pin him and humiliate him and downgrade him that further. So I like that too.
Yeah,
lovely all around. Yeah.
This whole package is really coming together just really, really nicely. The Raven stuff, I love how they escalated it. Like, they did not wait around. Like, he didn't work his way up. They didn't slow burn it. We are month and a half, 2 months into his run. He's already fought Dreamer a couple times. He's got wins over him. Beulah's already here. Like, so much is unfolding so quickly. And you know, these guys are in this universe now where they're just into an immediate blood feud that we still... The cool part, too, is, like, they've revealed enough to know there's some kind of history there, but they haven't fully explored it. So we have a lot more of the story and the back history to come with these guys. It's gonna, and we're seeing a little bit trickle in each time in each of their matches. So that's really well done. Yeah, they don't really explain why the Pitbulls left Jason, but I think they're a good fit as Raven's backup. Him and Stevie, you know, Stevie's kind of the mouthpiece and the schlub, and he's gonna get smacked around, and he's basically the coffee boy. But Raven needed some additional muscle, so I think the Pitbulls are a pretty good choice for that role, to be in there with their chains and, you know, roided up nonsense. So, and anyway, they're awesome. The loser himself, Mikey Whipwreck, is out next for our match against good old Ron Simmons, still hanging on here. Simmons is in the ring, he's running his mouth about Mikey, offers him a chance to walk away instead of getting his ass whipped. The crowd wants Mikey to kick his ass, and I like this match. It's potential for a few different paths, right? We can get a Simmons beat down, we can get Mikey hanging in, so there's a couple of options we can go here. Mikey stalls, he climbs in. Joey says Simmons should not take Mikey lightly. Mikey turns his back on the apron, Simmons slugs him to the floor and drags him to the ring. Simmons keeps telling Mikey to walk away as he beats on him. Simmons is really vicious here. He yanks Mikey by his shirt. He's spiking him and throwing him around like a doll. The crowd chants for 911 as the beating continues. Simmons hits a big gut buster and then another one, but uses his head instead of his knee. The crowd does a mocking tomahawk chop as Mikey hits a pair of low blows to finally slow him down. Mikey unloads with a flurry, lands a missile dropkick, and drops an elbow for two. Simmons comes back with a power slam and then destroys him with a sick choke slam as a message to 911 as the crowd fires up a chant for him again. Simmons gets another choke slam and then choke slams the ref. That was nasty. Fucking killed him. And Simmons is putting on a show here, but he gets disqualified. Then 911 chants continue as Simmons press slams Mikey into the arms of 911, who showed up at ringside just as Mikey was flying through the air. 911 hops in the ring as Simmons hammers away at him, and the crowd is really fired up. They're super hot for this. 911 punches back, and we get some hockey fight jockeying, and then Simmons blocks a chokeslam, hits a low blow, loads up a chokeslam, and then hits one of his own. That was a wild moment. Simmons walks off as 911 and Paul E. regroup. Some jobbers come out, and 911 destroys them all, calls Simmons a piece of shit, and 911 is extremely gassed from working here, and he stalks off to the back. I thought this was great. I thought Simmons looked like a fucking beast. The first guy who's really laid out 9-1-1, you know, Mr. Hughes back in the summer of 94 got some shots in, but this is really the first guy to leave him laid out. And the match was fun too, as Mikey got destroyed but never got beat, and he hung in. It was really well done. It was fun. And Simmons continues to be reborn. He was a great heel here, and seeing him take down 9-1-1 was a surprise. I don't think anyone probably expected that to happen with 9-1-1 got in the ring. So, Johnny, I went 2.5 for the match, and I liked the post-match quite a bit as well.
Yeah, the post-match was great. It was a great surprise to see Simmons fuck 9-1-1 up with his own move. And just a little disappointed that kind of Mikey reverted to his day one gimmick, where he just gets beat on, where, you know, he's been built. He should be past this, man. Maybe they could have used somebody else in this role, because we've been past this, and Mikey should be a little more established. But that's just a small complaint, because it got the job done for what it did. It was a good spot where 9-1-1 caught Mikey, and even though it was unnecessary for the jobbers to come in, it wasn't like 9-1-1 was that distressed for them all to come in, but it was just a setup for 9-1-1 to choke a few out, to get some of his heat back, and give his great promo where, you know, every other word was like a curse, where he's like, "I'll F you up, and you piece of shit," and just a heat promo.
Yeah, I was disappointed to see Mikey get beat down still. I mean, like we talked about last time, he was doing well and winning some stuff and showing some confidence. And, I mean, he doesn't technically lose this, so that's good. But it's a visual loss because he is just ragdolled everywhere. But, yeah, fucking Ron Simmons is looking crazy. Crazy beast, and I love the choke slam on 9-1-1. I thought that was great. And you're right, 9-1-1 only had to kill all the jobbers just so he could get his cred back after being embarrassed like that. But
yeah, he's gonna get some. Well, the crowd loves it, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. Right. I gave it 2.5 too, but I'm gonna need better Mikey stuff going forward.
Yeah, I get John's point. On one hand, he's above this and probably made and deserves to get ragdolled around again. But Simmons is established as a top-tier guy who's bigger and a bully. Like, so it kind of works. And also, if you have someone in there that the fans don't care about, it doesn't mean as much. So if you stick, like, a Dino Sendoff or one of those guys out there, the crowd's going to almost get behind Simmons. Versus here, it's a guarantee that they're going to hate Simmons for beating the shit out of Mikey. So I thought it was shrewd enough to leave him in there versus someone that the crowd wouldn't give a fuck about.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because why would 9-1-1 come into to help send off or something?
Right.
True.
All right. Joey Styles with Chris Benoit said they came tonight to prove why they're the champions and the best in the world, and two vendettas will be settled tonight. Taz cost Dean Malenko the TV title. He has guts since he showed up tonight, unlike that pussy Sabu who's halfway across the world. Benoit has always said that Sabu is a pussy, and now everyone knows it. He offers Taz a chance to come out and prove his manhood tonight if he wants. Taz comes out and goes right at Benoit. They trade blows until Malenko comes in and crushes Taz from behind. And out comes Rick Steiner to a huge pop. He and Taz clean house. That's a great flurry. The crowd is insane for Steiner. I think it's the biggest pop Rick Steiner's gotten since like 1988. Yes. The crowd chants fuck Sabu as the Pauly comes in and raises Steiner and Taz's hands. I thought it's a great moment. And on paper, like, you think, all right, Rick Steiner it seems like a weak sub for Sabu. But in 1995, like, the Steiners hadn't been on TV for a year in North America. They're big names. They're a big deal. You can almost argue he's a bigger name than Sabu in the wrestling world at that point, even though it seems crazy to say. But I think it was a good makeup, what was probably a last minute makeup for Paul and ECW to bring Steiner in here. And I like that they did it here to then let the excitement build toward the main event later. So they didn't just have him come out for the match and have everyone caught up in the hysteria of that versus focusing on the match. So we get a little buzz here. We get to get judge reaction. We see that they're into it. So then later they can adjust appropriately. So I thought this was, again, really well done across the board, John.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we'll talk about it more later or as the, you know, in the future, but the crowd was whipped into a frenzy by when Heyman made the announcement that, that Sabu was, pretty much told him that Sabu was stuck in Japan and he wasn't coming. And he gave the famous F Sabu promo, which, it would have been good, for us to see that.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe still to come.
Yeah, but that's what really whipped the crowd into a frenzy, where Paulie didn't know, you know, how they were going to take it, and supposedly he heard somebody in the crowd say, you know, F Sabu, and Paulie jumped on that and said F Sabu, and the crowd really got behind it, and, you know, that showed that they're behind the, you know, ECW and, you know, Paulie and the boys, and plus the addition of Steiner, so that really it was really a crowd pleaser for them.
Yeah, I think they're realizing quickly that, you know, the fans are there. They're fans of the promotion, and they're diehard fans of the promotion. And
they're above one guy. They're above just one guy.
It's the home team, right? So if a guy leaves, that guy sucks. Like that's how they're taking it. So, and I think Paul's learning that now. That okay, I thought they'd be upset that one of their big guys in the event's not showing, but you know what? This crowd is so loyal. And if you turn on them, they're going to turn on you. So Sabu not coming isn't a slight on ECW or Paul. It's a slight on Sabu. He's the one that fucked up and didn't show up, and they're not going to take it. So they're taking their anger out on him, and they're going to cheer his replacement. So it's already starting to show the diehard loyalty that these fans are going to have as ECW progresses. Jenny, what did you think of this?
I liked it, but I was very confused because all we pretty much heard from Joey in the beginning was that he was stuck in Japan. Like, I didn't realize that there was going to be, like, a huge backlash against it. And then Benoit's talking about how Sabu's a pussy, and then the crowd screaming, fuck Sabu. I'm like, wait, what happened? Like, I don't get it. Didn't we just love Sabu? So, momentary confusion there on my part. But, yeah. The fucking Rick Steiner, Daddy Rick Steiner, as I call him, pop was great. And I love that he wore the headgear.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's the Rick Steiner staple. That people feel ripped off if he didn't come out with the headgear.
I agree.
All right. Let us go now to our next match, which is a big one. It's a banger on paper. As Too Cold Scorpio defends his ECW TV title against Eddie Guerrero. As ECW continues to load up on elite talent, brings in Eddie here. Eddie, of course, hadn't really been too well known in North America. Worked in Japan and Mexico mainly. Was most known probably for his team with Art Barr. And he comes in here as ECW and Paul Heyman continue to scour not only maybe overlooked older talent that wasn't going to catch on anywhere else or had already been washed out, but also getting ahead of the curve, and this is something he becomes known for, ahead of the curve on the guys that eventually are going to hit. But he's trying to get as many, you know, as much juice out of the orange as he can on some of these guys before they, you know, he's trying to squeeze everything out before they end up making a big money deal somewhere else. So when you look at a guy like Eddie Guerrero or Dean Malenko or Chris Benoit, like all these guys, you see it in them that they're going to end up somewhere at some point, and they're going to be stars. So he's trying to get them in here, use them as much as he can, push them, then use them, put over other guys before they go on to become big stars elsewhere. And I think it's a shrewd action, and it shows this keen eye for talent and ability to go out there and continue to re-churn the roster, despite if guys are leaving or moving on, whatever, he's consistently bringing in talent. And luckily for him at this point, a lot of the big names haven't really started to filter out yet, so the roster is getting really stacked. I mean, we've talked about this on recent episodes. You look at all the guys on this roster and how deep it is, and now all of a sudden you're bringing in an Eddie Guerrero to this already loaded roster. It's insane when you look at the talent up and down. So as that continues on, Scorp has become a steady presence. We get some early shoving as Joey talks up Eddie's reputation, his family legacy, of course, the famous Guerrero family. The crowd chants for Eddie. He plays that up. And of course, this also kind of fills off of our, or follows off of our match where Hector Guerrero had showed up to fight Too Cold Scorpio as well. So another Guerrero family member in the house. Eddie works the arm, get us going, but some back and forth, trading a basic limb work as we get ramped up. Scorpio gets an STF, but Eddie gets free and they continue to ebb and flow. Joey talks about the passing of Art Barr as the match resets. Eddie offers a handshake, but Scorpio smacks him instead. We get a big flurry of near falls and holds. Scorpio offers his hand now, and Eddie clotheslines him down. Eddie slams him, hits a nice somersault senton from the apron, works into a Scorpion deathlock. Scorpio wiggles free, gets a rope break. Eddie pops up with a standing dropkick. Eddie snaps off a brainbuster, heads up top, and hits a perfect frog splash for two. Eddie gets a chin lock, but Scorp works free, where it goes on the attack. Hits a super kick and Sting spill outside, where Scorpio whips Eddie hard to the railing. Scorpio suplexes Eddie in for two, sends him flying with a nice double underhook suplex for an air fall. Scorpio gets knocked outside. Eddie meets with a huge flying crossbody off the top. That was an awesome spot. Back inside, Eddie gets two off a cradle suplex, hits a sick tornado DDT for two. Eddie whiffs on a charge to the corner, but trips up Scorpio on the top rope, takes him down the Frankensteiner for two. Eddie tries a second one, but Scorpio shoves him back and hits a high cross body. Scorpio slugs away, hits a splash in the corner, and then slams Eddie and hits a beautiful moonsault off the top for a close near fall. Scorpio follows with a powerbomb and a leg drop. Scorpio heads up top as well, nails a tumbleweed for a close near fall. Scorpio shoots Eddie in, but Eddie pops up and twists into a victory roll to win the match and the title in his debut appearance in ECW. It was a huge pop and a super cool moment. Things come full circle as Joey again mentions Art Barr, who had just passed away. We get a handshake from Respect and a great match. Top level debut for Eddie. Big bombs, heavy moves left and right with a hot crowd. Eddie is so crisp, so sharp. A great addition to the roster. And Scorpio delivers again. Jenny, I went 4 stars on this. It's a great, great match. A wonderful debut for Eddie, who's getting a ton of respect out of the gate.
I like this one too, but the way that you described it, you only hit like the high spots, which there was quite a bit. Like great moves. Like they traded great moves. It was very evenly matched, but you skipped over all the limb work in the mat wrestling and the holds, and it just went on and on. Like there was way too much of that interspersed with the great high flying spots that I want to see these guys do. So I bumped it a little bit for that and gave it 3¾ stars, John.
Okay. I was just a little down on the finish. And also I like Joey during this type match where there's no he leaves the shenanigans for the garbage matches and he was just a great. But the only thing is he missed, like after Scorpio hit the tumbleweed, it looked like he lifted Eddie up after two, which they're really relying on it too much. But Joey no sold it. He didn't even mention it. He just said that Eddie kicked out. But I didn't like that because you know Scorpio was obviously trying to be cute and you know and he lifted him up at two, which we've seen like too many times. It's something they're kind of relying on too much instead of a more creative finish. So that was the only drawback. But otherwise, you can't complain. There was it was a beautiful match and Eddie showed his various moveset. And another down thing was the fans, instead of just enjoying the great match, they were still. They still get too caught up on the F Sabu's. They're still fired up from Paul E.
Eventually, they get some Eddie chance in there. Yeah. So they click in. They dial it in when they're not mat wrestling and doing rest holds. So they get engaged eventually.
What'd you get for a grade, John?
3 stars.
3? Oof.
Yes.
I didn't mind the down stuff, Jenny, though. I thought it helped tell the story well and play up. It was meant to be two guys that work a classic wrestling style and then amp up to the high-flying stuff. Like I didn't mind the progression of the match.
Yeah, it was just uneven because they would go back and forth. Like it would be like boring shit and then great moves that look awesome. And it's like you want to see more of that. And then they would go back and it was just uneven. It didn't build. It was just back and forth seesaw.
Yeah,
not to beat it down, but I don't like that the Scorpio doing the pull up on the two count. That didn't fit in this match.
Also, his taped arm looked like absolute shit. Was that like masking tape or something?
Because this is nitpick central.
On the shoulder.
Jesus, the tape now. All right, down another half star. I didn't like the tape configuration on the shoulder. All right. Tough crowd.
I don't stand for sloppy.
It's no bale of hay at the back of a truck, but I know it's not.
Right.
Well, I mean, what'd you guys think of Eddie, his performance, though, in general, and his big debut? Like, I thought he shined. I thought he looked great.
Yeah,
like, it's a massive addition for them.
Nah, that's as many stars as you can give, of course.
Well, glad you guys at least like that. All right, let's go to our next match. This is Morning Wheelhouses. Axel and Ian Rotten are going at it again.
Yeah.
The Rotten Boys. Kind of like the Gatlin double, boys. Kenny Rogers.
Jesus.
If they ever go against Tommy Dreamer, the old Rotten Boys stick out Tommy. All right, Ian bolts on the ring and attacks Axel in the aisle. And the fight is on. The loser gets his head shaved. That's on the line here. Axel gets uses a metal sign to try and slice his brother open. Ian's already bleeding.
Yes.
I think these guys just like live with blood coming out of their heads. And
yes.
Jesus, the winner should get his head.
The head pack.
How do I sign up for? I need to find a haircut match
somewhere. They head back in where Axel misses a charge in the corner. Ian slugs him down. They end up in the fans where Axel bashes Ian with a chair. They trade roles and Ian uses the chair as they mingle with the fans. Axel's bleeding now too. They head back inside. Ian uses some sort of stick to choke and beat on his brother. The blood is flowing freely here as both hammer away at each other, moving in slow motion a bit. Axel has some sort of shiv, and he jams it over and over into Ian's arm. Things are getting grisly now as Axel kicks and punches, but Ian punches him in the nuts, and that cuts him off, and it's a neck breaker for two. Back outside into the crowd we go as Axel suplexes Ian to the bleachers. Back to ringside, Ian gets a chair and takes over, smashes his brother with it, and then pile drives him on the chair. Ian goes to the middle rope. He misses an elbow. Axel gets the chair and just crushes Ian and gets the win. Axel cuts his hair after the match, and then Ian beats out his brother with a paint pan and jams scissors into his head after the match. Of course, these guys can't just leave. They always got to have a bloody aftermath.
Yeah.
And this was fine. It was sluggish and basic. It was a few nasty spots. It wasn't as good as their last match. It's brutal, but it never amps up past, like, the next level. Like, I guess you wait for some natural escalation in these matches, but it feels like we really went hard last time, and then this just felt not as hot until the end with the scissors into the cut. But even that was after the match, so we'll see if this ends or continues. Joey kind of hints that they're not done yet, so I went 2.5 stars, John.
This is a 2-star mess. After a while, they run out of spots to bleed. Or,
right. Yeah, they're just kind of doing the same thing over and over.
And you have to rely on Axel's fat arm, or is that Ian? I don't know who's the one that always bleeds out the arm. It's a rough spot. The rough spot to rely on, but that's about it. But Joey was great in this. He's like, okay, Axel's now going to render his brother bald. Not that it'll ruin his good looks. And then I loved at the end where Axel was throwing the bloody hair and the fans were actually like fighting over it.
Yes. You know,
like the Straw Hat guy was. I wonder if he still has it as a souvenir. The bloody hair. and then as Ian's leaving, he just kind of tosses the garbage, a full garbage can over his head.
This is amazing. What are y'all talking about?
Yeah, here we go.
6 stars.
Too many arm bars from Eddie Guerrero.
give me rotten blood any day.
Rotten blood.
I swear I saw a fucking hammer in the crowd, too. I was like, is that a hammer? Like, because this is like everybody brought all their shit to the arena. I mean, I know we've seen that a bunch, but like I felt like the weapons were next level during this one, because there was the sign, there was the hammer, I swear, the scissors, but this was so bloody gross and wonderful, and I loved it, and I gave it 2.75 stars.
All right, that's not as bad as I was expecting.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, look, these guys are just murdering each other. I mean, really, they're just, it's a gore fest. That's all.
Yes.
I just felt this one was a little more meandering than the last one, which felt like it actually has some kind of progression to it, versus this was just like, okay, chair, scissors, you know, like it just felt repetitive, and they felt like they were moving a lot slower too. Just like complete slow motion for me in this one.
Well, it's a Peter Winston favorite, you know, angle match here. So
that's true. Likes his haircut matches.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the ring. And this is a random match at this point in the night as the Shah, Hack Myers, takes on Dino Sendoff. Myers goes to the eyes and hammers away out of the gate. He dominates the action with some basic strikes, drapes Dino across the bottom rope, drops a heavy leg drop on him. They spill outside. Dino ducks a clothesline. Hack runs into the post. Back inside, Dino gets a spurt of offense, gaining his composure, but Hack comes right back with the brainbuster for the win. I guess just a squash to keep Hack's little push plowing ahead, a little time killer. I thought there was going to be some kind of angle here, like 9-1-1 was going to come out and murder them both or something, but it really doesn't end up being much at all. I just went 0.5 star, I guess, Jenny. I don't know if you have anything to say there on this one. But
no, I was kind of the same way with 0.5 star. My notes say, why is this a match? I guess it's just, like you said, Hack needs a win. He hasn't really been doing, I mean, I've been enjoying him, but he hasn't been winning anything. So let's just give him this bullshit and let him get a win. I'm good with it. 0.5 star.
Yeah, this was quite the cool down. Actually, both these matches back to back were a big time cool down for our last two matches. And the highlight was Hack and Sendoff were crisscrossing, and then Hack ducked down and Sendoff leaped over him and then he tripped. That was about the highlight of the match. Fucking clumsy ass send off, and then Hack ended it quickly after that.
You're gonna Dino send off this match from the card? Hey, here we go. Big title match, huge title match. Shane Douglas has found himself wrapped up with the Sandman now because he helped Cactus Jack in his issues with him. Joey says, what kind of role model does Sandman be as champion? We get a long sauntering entrance for Sandman and woman as always. We clip ahead quickly as Douglas is in the ring, and we find out that he got Todd Gordon to ban the kendo stick tonight. Douglas attacks Sandman, goes at the knee, doing a quick flurry of strikes and a suplex. Clip ahead again as Sandman is sitting on Douglas with a cross-faced chicken wing hooked in. Sandman demands woman smack Shane, but she doesn't. And Joey thinks because Shane has hit a woman before, she doesn't want to get involved. Sam hits a shoulder breaker. As Joey says, woman is not helping him here. He should be brawling, not trying to wrestle. Sam is bitching at woman about not slapping Douglas. We cut ahead again. Sam hits a top rope leg drop. We get a fuck Sabu chant. Sandman tells woman to go get the cane. She runs away. We clip to Sandman hitting a pile driver as Joey says Sam is doing this without the cane or brawling in the stands. Woman comes back with the cane and Sandman lights up a cigarette. But as he smokes, woman throws Shane the cane. He hits a low blow and gets the win. Joey's trying to piece everything together. Shane is laughing. He brings woman to the ring. They embrace and make out. After they leave, Sandman suddenly smokes his cigarette in the ring alone. We really didn't see enough of this to judge how good it was. What we did see was pretty bland and basic. Sandman was made to look silly, though, even though he hung with Shane. Him stopping to smoke and asking for the cane, it was like a little too much character stuff for him. And it's sad to see Woman leave him, as they're so great together. But I guess maybe we're due for a change to give Shane more to brag on, gives Woman some gold, as now she's once again managing the champion. And again, this is more angle based on what we saw because it's so chopped, so I didn't give it a grade. Just kind of went NA. More of a segment than anything for me, John.
Yeah, they didn't do much in the ring because I guess they figured that all anybody would remember is the big turn at the end. So that's why they kind of mailed it in the ring, and Sandman didn't really get that much offense in.
They're just
setting up for that big moment. Yeah.
Yep.
I kind of wish we could have saw all of it, but like you said, it was pretty basic. But it did look like Sandman was actually trying to wrestle, and Joey says at one point he's trying to wrestle Shane Douglas. But I mean, we've seen Sandman do some okay stuff before when he actually tries. So, but yeah, that woman turn. What do we think about that?
It's an interesting idea. Now, we'll have to see, right, where things go. And they've done this so well that we've seen some fuckery from Sandman and Woman before. We saw with the blinding. They're willing to go pretty far for a ruse. I mean, Sandman was pretty much dead and buried with blindness, like Ralphie in Christmas Story. You know, that, now he's back. So we've done this before.
Soap poisoning.
So is it a setup? Is it legit? It could be either, because it's believable to be either. We've seen them work this shit before, but we've also know that woman's a devilish woman, right? Like, she's wants the gold more than anything. Maybe she's tired of Sandman and his bullshit, especially in this match. He's yelling at her. He's fucking around doing the cigarette. So maybe she felt Shane was a better option. He's been a dominant world champion for a year. So I think it opens up some questions. We'll see how they play out. But I didn't mind it. But the only detraction for me is that this stuff like constantly happens in ECW. So you could argue that they go to the well too many times with these kinds of things, but it's working, so it's hard to argue with it.
That's true, and people like me fall for it. So, I mean, we're just fucking stupid marks.
Same here.
I guess because you don't think they're going to do it again, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm kind of with you. Like, I didn't fully expect it either.
Yeah. Woman's dress was real hot, too, also.
What did you think of all this, John?
Yeah, well, anybody that looks like woman, they're gonna change their mind a lot. So.
What does that mean?
Well, they're always going to go with the winner or the hotter guy, so it's no surprise.
But Sandman's such a prize there, right?
Well, personality-wise, definitely.
Yeah.
He's got charisma.
Sure does. More than Shane, anyway.
Well, We don't know about that. I mean, I think you're probably living a little bit better of a life if you were Shane Douglas than you were Sandman, no?
Yeah, but I don't know.
I mean, if you're Sandman, you're kind of living like, you know, Charlie on It's Always Sunny or something. You know, maybe you're probably not really a tiny apartment with a tiny bed, Frank in your bed. Yeah.
Well, some people like that.
Okay. Well, we get some edits in here because, again, we are on home video. So Sandman is backstage smoking. He ain't happy. Says woman encouraged him to beat his wife on TV to hit him with a cane. And now she encouraged the wrath she'll be receiving. She saw. We all saw what Sandman did to his wife. What does she think he would do to her? Douglas will never be beaten like he did before. And woman will woman better bring every woman's activist she knows. This Saturday, he'll beat Shane for the title in the rematch and beat woman like the bitch that she is. Douglas and woman are then backstage. He's chuckling over screwing Sandman and banging woman after his match. Sandman has become victim of his own rhetoric. Sandman is like all the others that don't have what it takes to win the belt. He's addicted to the gold. He won't give it up easily. He deserves the title, which many others don't. He earned woman through blood, sweat, and tears, and thanks to being champion, he could buy stuff he couldn't afford as a kid. We then get a clip of him and woman leaving the ring. He tells the cameraman to turn it off so his wife won't see. On Saturday, Douglas shuts his mouth for good. He'll shove his fist so far up his ass, he'll choke on it. Sandman thinks he's so tough, swinging the cane and beating up women, but the ring is his jungle, and Sandman will be his prey. Woman says Sandman doesn't scare her. She was around when Sandman was doing nothing. She rode him to the top. She was the brains and power and still is, and Douglas just does his evil man chuckle. All right, any thoughts on these two promos, John?
Yeah, Sandman, same woman encouraged him to beat his wife. It brought a tear to the eye.
Yeah.
For the departed Peaches.
The halcyon days of Peaches, yeah. And Tommy Cairo, what I'm missing him for sure.
Oh, Tommy, you saw what I did to my wife, he says. Okay. Yeah, good stuff all around here. Shane is crowing like a rooster, and woman looks completely possessed. I fucking the camera during the entire promo. And Shane says, let's keep that a secret. And she says, why? Which I thought was funny. So good stuff.
That'll be interesting. And it's kind of cool how, like, Shane and Sandman have been pulled into this feud through Cactus. You know what I mean? Like, they weren't really having an issue with each other. Douglas got involved to help Cactus, and now all of a sudden he's in the middle of it, and it's cost Sandman and woman. Like, it's been a cool spinoff of that feud to get us here. So and Cactus and Sam, like, that's the whole thing too. So it's like they're done. But it's been a cool sidebar. Sam, I guess it's the title picture because of Douglas getting involved.
Take you back. Do-do-do-do. Take you back. Take you back. Do-do-do-do. Take you back.
Out come the Public Enemy for our first big three-way dance that has a lot of hype, a lot of build poured into it. And they're looking to get the titles back that they so covet. But in their way are only not only Taz and Rick Steiner, but also our champion. That'll be Chris Benoit and the great Dean Malenko. They have a great stoic entrance. As always, they stalk out. They attack Public Enemy with the belts, get things going right away. As they're brawling, out come Taz, Steiner, and Paul Lee. All six men throw down. Taz and Steiner clean house with suplexes. The crowd is still super into Rick Steiner. I mean, he could have been like the biggest legend in wrestling history if he stuck around here because they were treating him like royalty. Suplexes continue as Public Enemy comes back. Benoit gets rattled too as Taz dumps him on his head. Benoit comes back with a nasty German, but Rick rolls through, pops up, and hits a Steiner line and a top rope bulldog. Joey says Rick is nuts and he fits in just fine in ECW. Lots of brawling around the ringside. We get some weapons in the mix. Inside, Rick hits a disgusting sit-out tombstone on Rock, and Taz covers for two. Outside, Benoit shoots Taz into a chair that Malenko's holding. Rock comes over and smashes Benoit with a pair of frying pans. Lots of brawling and trading off of partners here. Some of them spill into the crowd. Benoit and Malenko double-team Taz in the ring. Benoit has a top rope headbutt, and Malenko jackknife pins him to eliminate him and Steiner. It was kind of a sad, weak exit for Taz. After all the build and hype around them being part of this match, they're just out. Like, that's it. And it's not even Rick getting pinned. I mean, I don't know if that's part of the deal for him to come in, but I guess Sabu leaving really kind of burned him. So we'll see where Taz goes from here. Be interesting how they take him. If he stays in the tag division somewhere or if he moves on his own. Taz and Rick stick around. They beat down Benoit Malenko and Public Enemy. And then they take off. Taz suplexes Rocco on top of Steiner on a big bump. Paul finally gets his guys out of there as the champs are in full control. Steiner returns with Paul's cell phone and batters everyone with it. Taz joins him, and then finally Todd Gordon gets him to leave. The champs get back to work and dominate, and the Public Enemy comes back with a chair. Grunge is bloodied up really good. He eats a chair shot from Malenko. Rocco uses a crutch on Benoit, but Malenko nails Grunge with a dropkick to knock him outside. Rock and Benoit end up in the crowd, and Rock smashes his knee with a chair. We get more weapons in and out of the ring. Grunge uses a rope on Malenko inside, while Benoit and Rock end up near the nest. Rock DDTs Benoit on the staging, puts him on a table. Rock scales the balcony. Benoit moves, and Rock moonsaults himself through the table. Back inside, Malenko is surviving Grunge. He uses the rope to choke Dean viciously and then hits a neck breaker with the rope. All four are back to fighting in the ring, but Grunge gets shoved out, and the champs get to work. Dean hits a stiff brainbuster, and they set up a table. Benoit puts Rocco on top rope and superplexes him through it. Rock gets dumped outside. Now the champs double up Grunge, who's soaked in blood. They take turns with pin covers, but Grunge keeps kicking out. The champs hit a double drop kick, but Grunge stays alive again. He's able to block a back body drop with a DDT. Rock sprints up and hits a drive-by on Dean for the win and the huge pop as we have new champions and Public Enemy. They survive. They get the belts back, taking a vicious assault to end this reign of terror by Benoit and Malenko. Taz and Steiner show up. They get into a brawl with Malenko and Benoit as Public Enemy celebrate. Then out come the Pit Bulls, and they beat the shit out of the champions with the chains as the elevation continues to be ramping up for them now. And that closes us out. So I thought this was a fun match. It was a little tough to keep up with, and it was fairly basic at times. It went against the strengths of Benoit and Malenko, which kind of hurt some of it. They didn't get to see them throwing their big bombs and strikes and submissions, as did the Sabu no-show. That did hurt it. Steiner was a good replacement, but after all the hype, to not get Sabu in here did hurt, I thought, in the long run. But it was fun. It was a good payoff. It was a cool moment for Public Enemy to get their titles back. I did like that quite a bit. And I went 3.25 stars on this, Jenny.
I liked it a lot too. I went 4 stars on it. Mm-hmm. It, like you said, it's definitely more of a Public Enemy match than it is a Benoit and Malenko match, but I thought they did pretty well with the brawling and stuff. Like you said, parts of it were hard to see, like when Rocco and Benoit went off into the crowd, you missed a lot of stuff. Like, you got a lot of crowd reaction, but you couldn't see what was happening. I'm always a sucker for when somebody goes off the nest onto a table, whether there's a guy there or not. So I like that spot a lot. Still some more fuck Sabu chants. You fucked up chants. A lot of chanting going on.
Yeah.
In this. But I thought Rocco and Johnny looked really awesome. They were, you know, taking a bunch of horrendous offense and also giving it. It's not the, I don't know, it's my kind of match, so but they all do end up back in the ring at the end, so that's good. But I just really liked it, and I wonder, would the result have been the same if Sabu was there? Would PE still win?
Yeah, I think we're headed toward that way anyway.
Yeah.
I think Taz and Sabu would have had a much better showing, but I think they were destined to probably eventually split up on some level. I don't think they were getting the belts back. I think this is all to get the belts back on Public Enemy as a stabilizing team, and I think they have plans for them going forward with a feud. So I'm confident they were getting the belts back either way, but I think this match has more hype, and Taz and Sabu have a much better showing than Steiner and Taz did.
Yeah, it was obvious that the Steiner deal was one night only, and even that probably a maximum of 5 minutes in ring time, because he shot in there and did his Frankenstein or his Steiner line, his Tombstone. He put in all his moves in his brief two three minutes in there, and got his hot moves in, and Taz took the loss and they got out of there. But surprisingly, Benoit Malenko, they dominated most of the match, and then they showed that they just couldn't put them away. They were trying to take turns, and they couldn't decide, you know, which guy to get the pin, and finally that indecisiveness cost them. And one highlight was when a fan gave Rocco a soda can, and it was like the last of a six pack. still with the plastic on it. Must have been tight security letting them bring their own six-pack.
Right, six-pack of soda.
Yeah, that was a highlight. But 3 stars.
Yeah.
3 stars.
It was good. It was a little bit of wind out of the sails of Sabu. And like I said, I thought the style really goes against Benoit Malenko. Like, they're fun brawling, but in general, you want to see those guys in a match like we saw Eddie and Sabu, Eddie and Scorpio earlier. That's more of, to me, of a Benoit Malenko style match. So that's what you want to see versus this plunder stuff. So I think it's good to get it's time to get the belts off them. Like, Malenko's got in the TV mix. You know, Benoit's got other stuff going on too. So, like, we're fine. The Public Enemy is a good, better stabilizing team to be on top. It was good to give them a run with the belts. Like, I think it helped legitimize them, but. Mm.
Only because the down times were when Public Enemy had to sell a lot. That was that's not their expertise.
I mean, they've really become the top faces. I mean, they were kind of tweening back and forth for a while, but they're pretty much now the faces in the division.
Yeah, the fan celebration was great with the swaying back, doing the sway back and forth.
They're beloved right now. I mean, I wouldn't rank them like top acts right now because the crowd is so loaded, but. When you look at favorites, I mean, they're up there, right?
Oh,
I mean,
they're up there, definitely.
Them and 911 might be the biggest two favorites right now in the company, me and Mikey.
It's one of those iconic things where the fans really get into the entrance.
And even with the fake song, like, I know that's a big part of ECW that we are missing, right, on this. And especially hurtful, I think, for you, Jenny. Or maybe not, because you don't know what it's like. But it sucks that you don't get to see these with the actual music and the songs in there. Like, Public Enemy's big song is Hot Stepper, right? So they're all dancing to that. But I think the atmosphere is still so good, and maybe because I wasn't as tied into ECW growing up. Like, I know some people say they can't watch it, right? It's like it ruins it for them to not have the music. But for me, it's not as bad because I didn't see it as much either. But I'm sure for some it's jarring. But I don't know. Like, to me, it all holds up pretty well. Even with that, you almost get used to the fake songs. Like, they become the songs for you. Like that, you know. So. Not as good as TNA's 2002 theme music, but
okay. I was gonna say you're kind of into the TNA.
It's no my world.
Well, you know, just one last thought about this. I like that Rick Steiner was in this. I thought he looked like he was having fun with it. Yeah. So I enjoyed his performance here too.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was. Look, I think they did the best they could do in the situation they had. They felt like, you know, in the past we might have just got like Mikey or someone in here, you know, which would have been fine. But it was cool of them to actually go out and bring in a name star to make this count. And they felt bad, so they wanted to make it count for the fans. And I'm glad the fans rewarded them with a fun reaction. But they weren't going to win. I mean, I guess you could say maybe. Like, I mean, Eddie Guerrero just debuted and won, so what's the difference? Like, who knew if Rick was going to stick around or not, I guess, at that point. So I don't think it probably killed the expectation too much, but looking at it, they definitely feel like filler until they get out of the way and then we get to the real feud.
Exactly.
Instead of what it has been, and that's been Taz and Sabu heavily in the mix. All right. Let's get to our awards before we wrap up here tonight. Match of the night for me was Scorpio versus Guerrero.
I went with the three-way dance.
No, too cold and Eddie.
Worst match easily for me was Myers and Dino.
Oh, yes.
Sendoof, yeah.
Sendoof.
Every fucking podcast I do, there's a jobber named Dino. Dino Bravo, Dino Sendoff.
Dino Bravo's no jobber.
I wish he was. All right, best moment, I had two. Beulah's debut. Actually, I had three. Beulah's debut, Ron Simmons' awesome barrage, beating the shit out of 911, and then Eddie's title win.
Yeah, I like the PE win.
Yeah, I got to go with Public Enemy.
Yeah,
winning the belts and the crowd celebration.
There was a lot of big moments on the show.
Yeah. It was loaded. Like I said, too bad they couldn't. Aini Kamosi is holding out for a lot of bucks for the hot stepper there. Here come the hot stepper, murderer.
At least they didn't dub in their fucking WCW theme or anything like that to really take you out of it. Like in the WCW 98 stuff where they use Walls of Jericho for Jericho. It's like this takes you completely out of the moment. I'd rather a fake song than like their later wrestling song from another promotion. All right. Most 90s, I'm with Raven, Ron Simmons. I'm sorry, that's Stock Rising. Raven's gear and Scorpio's multicolored windbreaker.
I went with Taz's shorts and Shane's jean jacket.
Yeah, I rely on the usual, though, the Public Enemy, their basketball gear, the starter gear.
All right, Stock Rising, I'm with Raven's crew. I went with Ron Simmons, Rick Steiner, Eddie Guerrero, and Public Enemy. I thought all those guys had a big night.
Yeah, yep. Simmons and PE.
Yep, agreed.
Stock Falling, The Poor Broad Street Bullies, Ian Rotten, Sandman, I thought had a bad night, and Sabu, of course, for doing
well. Sendoff.
Sendoff.
His stock is already rock bottom. I mean, he's a penny stock as it is.
Rock. It went even lower with that trip.
Agreed about Sabu, although I did put a question mark beside it.
No, he deserves it.
I'm not ready to let go of Sabu yet. I don't hate him like Philly does right now.
Yeah, they're not happy. Final grade. This was, again, a very good show. We're in a red hot streak here at 95. Loaded with moments. And even, you know, we're nitpicking 3-4. But, like, these are still very good matches. Like, 3 and up is, like, that's a good match. And there's multiple on all these shows. Like, these are tight tapes. Storylines popping. There's very little in the way of meaningless matches, especially on this card. Outside of, like, the 2-minute Hack Myers match, everything else meant something. Like, even that Pitbull squash played a role in the Stevie Raven stuff. So everything here tied together. There was a fun through line for the show. I went 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. 7.5 out of 10.
A little less, 6.5. Kind of because of that downer with the back-to-back Rottens and then Hack and Sendoff. Even though, like I said, at least they were short and sweet. But
yeah,
that kind of brought it down a little.
Yeah, that was a lull for sure. All right, listen, that was a really fun show. It's always cool to do the special shows. But what that means is usually the TV right after can be a little choppy for us. So on our next episode, we're going to have one episode of TV, but then right away they're back the next weekend with another big ECW Arena show, and that is Hostel City Showdown. So they were not messing around during the stretch, and we're going to review that in our next episode. So we look forward to doing that. And of course, each and every day we have stuff dropping here in the North-South. We have Mondays with Aaron George, either from Montreal to Memphis or The Year That Was. He just dropped a great look. John, I know you really liked it, the look at 1986.
Ah, yes, 86. And he's talking WrestleMania 2 and the big event, of course, which rarely gets spoken about these days. But yes, I loved it. Great job by Aaron. Great solo job there.
Yeah, no, he does
for the OGs.
And that's a wonderful series. He really does. I mean, he fills 45 minutes or so on his own, breaking down the year in WWE pay-per-views. He's going from worst to best. So we've already had 6 of those out, and he's done a really nice job. So they're easy to catch up on, easy to listen to. So if you haven't checked them out yet, do that. On Tuesdays, you get either TNA Never Dies. Jenny is with me, you, and Aaron going through the history of NWA TNA right now. We're a few weeks. We just did the first 4 episodes of the last 2 that we've done. Mm-hmm. And our next one will be into weeks 5 and 6. That's always a lot of fun. And on every other Tuesday, alternating with that, is a Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast with Jake Williams. His newest one just dropped. They're doing the fallout from Backlash. He was drawn by Logan Crossland. Wednesdays is with Chad Campbell. You either get Carolina Dreamin', which is looking at classic Jim Crockett Promotions matches to prep for the GWCW project, or Fighting Spirit of 06, where he's working through the year of 06 in North American Wrestling. He's wrapping up January. So another cool solo series from Chad. Thursdays, you either get this show right here you're listening to, or Wrestling Warzone. That's me and Chad. We just did WrestleMania 12 a few weeks ago. We did the April 1st week of wrestling, and that was a great episode of Raw. We had the debut of Mankind and Mark Merrow, and of course Mankind attacking the Undertaker. So we're going to be heading toward Good Friends, Better Enemies over the next few episodes of that. And on Saturdays, you get a No Holds Barred, usually most weeks, 3 out of the 4 of the month, where Aaron and I do a myriad of stuff. We set up our Twitter tournaments. We ranking all the pay-per-view years. We just dropped our June ranks, and you occasionally get a Jeff Lawrence Wrestling as well. So lots going on in the world of North South Connection. You can follow me at JT the Pod Guy. We're in the middle of our Twitter tournament. The last one, the newest one, is just about wrapped up. That is SummerSlam main event. Our next one will be dropping soon, so stay tuned for that. John, anything you want to plug?
We'll be having another year on Pop, our monthly special on the Pop feed. And we'll be back with the pay-per-view. What are we up to? We're going to be hitting the 91 Rumble soon, right?
Yep, that'll be coming up soon, my friend. We're doing the newest PTB dropped last week. That was the main event from November 90. We got the December. We got the November MSG, because that's the final bit of that week of action in the WWF. A ton of stuff going on, I believe. So we'll be going on from there. And then December will be following that. Jennifer?
Me. I am at Jenny Position on Twitter and the Facebook page. I have a couple of shows right now that are actually quite good. One of them is called Talking Pop. It's with my friend Tim Capel. We did an interview with Calvin Crowell, and it's an all-timer. He is a hell of a person, and it's a great interview.
Yeah.
Quite the storyteller. So listen to that for greatness.
And amazing.
Right? Also on my feed, I have a show called You Heard About Pluto. And in this episode, me and you, Justin, mm-hmm. and your friend, Josh Richer, ended up watching a couple of things. One of them ended up being the American Gladiators pilot episode.
Mm-hmm.
And also we watched like half an episode of Baywatch.
Yes. That was a fun show to do. I recommend that I listen to. Josh has an interesting child abduction story that he was nearly entangled in. listen to that. We talk a lot about us growing up in the 90s and watching American Gladiators and different stuff like that. Talked about that Baywatch episode. So it's a good conversation. It was a good rapport, and I enjoy it.
Well, also, on the Place V Nation Wrestling feed, there should be an episode of PTB NXT. Jake Williams, Tim Cable, and I talked about the three episodes of NXT TV from March of 2014. It is a hilarious episode, and you will also learn a lot, too. Also, a new Jenny and the Gems with a... an interesting look at a hidden gem, maybe. We'll see. I haven't watched it yet.
We'll see.
That's it.
The final thing I'll plug is a new Body Press Your Luck as well. It was our best episode yet, our wrestling trivia game show on the Place of Nation Wrestling feed. Ryan Everett took on James Grunberg and Mike Poulin, and it was a interesting on one end and a war on the other. So I highly recommend that. Listen, if you haven't checked that show out yet, it's a lot of fun. Our first ever wrestling game show on the PTK feed. All right, that'll do it. Thank you for everyone for joining us. Stay extreme. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Goodbye.
Fuck Sabu. Anyone test will hear the fine lady sing. Act like you know, G go. I know what Bo don't know. Touch them up and go. Uh oh. Cha cha ching ching. Here come the hot step up. I'm the lyrical gangster. Big up the crew in the area. I'm the lyrical gangster. Big up all crew bow ya. I still love you like that. Here come the hot stepper. I'm the lyrical danger. Big up a crew in the area. I still love you like that. Here come the hot stepper. I'm the lyrical gangster. I'm a name and I'm a danger. Oh.